to Gonkcast, a long-form discussion podcast about the music of English electronic duo Autechre, album by album, EP by EP. I'm Gabe.
I'm Dan.
And wow, I've really got to apologize this time for our lengthy absence. In fact, I have mentioned my challenges with moving and starting a new job plenty of times recently, but I should probably explain in a bit more detail. The job I've started is that of a college professor. I was just a lowly grad student when we started this podcast. So I'm teaching a bunch of new classes and like lesson planning my ass off from scratch every day. I only mention this because next semester I'll be teaching a lot of the same classes. So the prep won't be nearly as, you know, all time and life consuming, which means that'll probably be a great time to embark on deep diving the discography of a new artist. So we'll keep the content coming, you know, until then. Honestly, it's like almost done with this semester, so it's not even really the next semester. It's just if I can survive this first one. But it'll probably be a little bit sporadic, so please continue to bear with us. I really appreciate your patience. On that note, our mission today is to discuss all of Autechre's collaborations with the Hafler Trio. There's the 2003 release called AE30 and H3AE, the 2005 release AE03 and 3HAE, and the 2011 DVD album thing AH3EO and HA30E, in parentheses, AE303. We will almost definitely refer to them as the 2003 one, the 2005 one, and the 2011 one from here on out. Next time, I think we're both dying to listen to some actually fun music, so we might spend some time in the world of AE bootlegs next. We'll probably pick one or two major bootlegs to go in depth on, but we want to at least touch on a few more that are special to you guys. So write in and let us know what your favorite bootlegs are. GonkCastPod@gmail.com. Again, we want to hear about those bootlegs. GonkCastPod@gmail.com. Okay, Dan, I'm frankly eager to get this one over with. So why don't you tell us everything we need to know about Autechre's collaborations with the Hafler Trio in general, and then we'll take it one release at a time.
Yeah, when the project started back in the early 80s, the Hafler Trio was actually a duo formed by Andrew McKenzie and Chris Watson, a founding member of Cabaret Voltaire. The third member was a fictional scientist named Dr. Edward Molenbeek. Since then, the Hafler Trio has really been McKenzie's solo project, but he often uses it to collaborate with other artists like Stephen Stapleton of Nurse with Wound, Jonesy of Sigur Rós, Michael Girard of Swans, and, of course, Autechre, just to name a few examples. It's not clear how exactly this AE collaboration came to be, but we know that Autechre commissioned McKenzie to produce some kind of film for screens at the All Tomorrow's Parties Festivals, which Autechre curated in April of 2003. And McKenzie describes their meeting in a 2003 interview with The Wire by saying, "Sean wrote to me saying it was a shame that we'd missed each other when they played in Iceland," he recalls, "and that it would be good to meet at some point and to do something. I didn't know them, so I said, this is all very interesting." Sean wrote back really pissed off saying, "Can't you take a fucking compliment?" It got more friendly and we decided to try it.
Yeah, and as far as how the collaboration works, that's a bit mysterious too, but why would we expect anything else from Autechre? In the 2013 Ask Autechre Anything, Sean explained, "We approached it as though we were temporary members of the Hafler Trio, formally deferential to Andrew. If we had put beats over it, that would have made it more boring for us. Working with him gave us the opportunity to explore some of his territory without plagiarizing him too much while simultaneously plagiarizing him too much. He's a brilliant man. At the same time, though, there are indications that these releases work more like a split. The Wire claims that for the 2003 release, the two groups exchanged sounds and produced a single 20-minute piece each, both somewhat in homage to each other. And Die Stadt, the label in charge of the 2011 release, explains that, quote, both artists have constructed pieces of 2 hours length each. The track titles also imply this, of course, but I guess who knows? Anyway, that kind of sets us up to dive into the first release, 2003's AE30 and H3AE. Anything else we need to know about this one specifically, Dan?
Yeah, just that this is the shortest of the bunch by far, at just about 30 minutes in length, and that it was released as an elaborate limited edition CD package, which McKenzie seems to be fond of. To quote Discogs, "It's packaged in a printed tri-fold card sleeve with a disc in each side and 10 black and white printed art cards in the middle. The tri-fold card sleeve, in turn, is packaged in a tri-card trifold card cover. That's a tongue twister. With a tongue and groove closure, along with an obi strip that is sealed with a red disc embossed with the label's name, which is a phonometrography. The copyright notice on the first disc reads, "All rights reserved. See the little card on the table, right?" And the copyright on the second disc reads, "All rights reserved. The head waiter cannot be bribed." Also, it's worth noting that this project was always planned as a series. The 2003 Wire interview already promises more installments.
So maybe it goes without saying, but I should probably also mention that none of these releases are particularly popular, to say the least. This one's got just 100 ratings on Rate Your Music, which is more than I would have thought, honestly, for an average of 2.78. And even The Wire calls its pieces, quote, somewhat insubstantial, mere tasters. But on that note, Dan, what is your previous familiarity with Autechre's collaborations with the Hafler Trio as a whole?
Pretty much none. I had downloaded them and, you know, years ago, and, you know, I think just was sort of immediately turned off by it, and I definitely never dug into it. So pretty much coming at this with fresh ears.
Yeah, I think I am too. I feel like, because I had them on my hard drive, and I mean, not the DVD one, but, you know, until this sort of vinyl set came out, which we can talk about more later, but so I must have at least tried it, but like, you know, maybe this is telling, but I think it made no impression on me to the point where I felt like I had never listened to it before, you know,
yeah,
we started
exactly.
doing this. You know, we've definitely mentioned being fans of various strands of experimental music before, especially in regard to Autechre's engagement with it. But I feel like next we should discuss kind of our pre-existing feelings about drone, electroacoustic music, and music concrète. What I'm wondering is how much you actually enjoy listening to like the pure 100% versions of these genres. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean, because you know, electroacoustic music concrète, that it's sort of the, you know, intellectually I like it, and but you know, how often do I sit at home and put it on? You know, not very. Drone though, I do have a big fondness for. I like really, really love Phil Niblock, and you know, just tons of that stuff. I mean, there's a time and a place for it. Again, I don't just you know, drive around listening to it, but I do really love to like listen to that kind of stuff when I read, or you know, as I go to sleep at night and all. So I do love the 100%, you know, straight drone, but yeah, electroacoustic music concrète, intellectually I enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've spent a lot of time digging around and stuff like this. I find it kind of inspiring, like in a weird, it almost seems like it, like the early stuff I'm talking, like, you know, these like weird electronic experiments, you know, Pauline Oliveros and people like that. It's like almost like the first version of a sample bank or something, where like maybe you're never supposed to listen to the whole thing, but it's just like every once in a while I jump in and like it's interesting and cool to hear them just playing and experimenting with sound. You know, that being said, I really don't enjoy listening to like that pure version of this stuff that much. I much more prefer it's kind of the ripples it kind of sends out in the world of music.
Yeah,
you know, when people like Autechre, for example, like kind of are inspired by that play with sound and that sound creation and just tearing apart sounds and stuff like that. I much prefer that, and probably very rarely listen, you know, in any sustained way to just the pure thing. You know, I do think that like you mentioned drone, right? And I like a lot of stuff that I would call drone, but I personally find that like what I'm looking for in drone and anything like really avant-garde is some sort of musicality. Like I find it, I don't even know how to articulate this right, but it's like I find it very impressive when somebody is taking something that is not music, and yet something about it makes me feel compelled to keep listening as if it was music. You know, they like they use pulses and like sort of shifting tones and things that like somehow approximate chord changes or beats. You know, it's like not that,
yeah,
but it's like gives me something to grab onto. Like I hate listening to purely digital like ambient music because it just doesn't change in any way. But I like when it's quite a dense layer of like changing, shifting sounds, and you can kind of hear pulses and like living, breathing elements inside of it. So does that make any sense? Like I'm looking for musicality,
yeah,
even in my drone.
I completely understand that. I mean, you know, most people would, you know, call like Sun Drone or something, but it it's much different than listening to
pretty musical.
Yeah, yeah, than listening to, you know, Tony Conrad or right, Niblock or anything. You know, it's definitely, you know, a more musical version, even though it's not, you know, what's immediately apparent as music. Yeah, I 100% know what you mean, and I feel the same way with, you know, the electroacoustic and Music Concrete stuff. It like you said, it's very like inspirational, and I think that's sort of you know, it was like inventing these like sounds and stuff, and so like that's important. Yeah. Somebody has to do that for then someone like Ottecker and, you know, right, other people, you know, to form that into something you know, that melds with I hate using the word normal music, but you know what I mean by right, that. Right.
Yeah, I think we were even talking last episode, as long ago as it was, and I can't remember in what context, but like something about how I really don't like that kind of found sound, just like random percussion stuff. But I like it when it's incorporated into like an avant-garde jazz trio or something, because then yeah, they're like mm-hmm, making something like music together. But I just don't like the pure, like, I'm just hitting on things and... You know,
yeah, I've spent a lot of time at noise shows, and I mean, there's definitely a difference in when it's just, you know, some jerk off playing noise on their computer randomly, and then somebody who, like, you know, is making interesting sounds in an interesting way, and, you know, often you know, melding them into music. I mean, you know, which toot our own horn here. That's what we were always trying to do. You know,
yeah, that's why we were like there. Our passion for many years is like trying to do that. And this, I guess that's the best way to put it, is like, I like noise and I like electroacoustic and all this shit, but what I'm interested in is like, what are you doing with noise? Mm-hmm, you know,
exactly.
Like I don't care much just for noise. So we'll see, you know, here's a little tease. We'll see how we feel these releases manage that. But you know, let's move into the actual releases. And we'll try our best to take it one at a time, even though there's obviously quite a lot of similarities between all of them. And honestly, I just don't know how long this episode will be, because I don't know how much we'll have to say about it. But if you had to, gun to your head, describe the like sound palette of the 2003 release specifically, how would you describe it?
I'd say just go ahead and pull the trigger. Nah, I mean, it's definitely hard. Especially, I'm trying to avoid just using the word drone, because that's pretty much what it is. I mean, I was trying to take notes, like listening, you know, to all these releases, and you know, words like spooky, dissonant, you know, industrial kept coming up, which I kind of feel are, you know, sort of simple descriptors, not yeah, really, you know, some great insight to it or anything. I think maybe specifically this 2003 one, I think like the ending portion of it, like really sort of reminded me of like a factory. I'll go with that. But it's difficult to describe for sure.
Yeah, I almost feel like, you know, the two pieces, which if the names are to be believed, like just because which letter goes first, you know, which maybe isn't like the best indication, but I sort of assume the first one is Ottecker's because it starts with AE and the other one starts with the letter H, so I'm assuming it's, you know, Hafler Trios. But you know, we can talk about like how much we believe, like how much, if it's a split or what kind of interplay is going on, but I do feel like there's some kind of difference between the two. The first one is quite like, you know, buzzy kind of mm-hmm, it's like it's sort of a and I want to talk about the structure too, but it feels like almost one long just changing kind of buzzy tone in a way. I mean, it changes a lot in various places, but it's like, it starts off with some like pretty shrill ringing, and it has this kind of metallic, you know, it, like constantly throughout this piece, it's kind of blurring the lines between, am I hearing like metal kind of like shaking, or is that feedback, or is that like a digital, you know, kind of time stretched effect or something? Like it's constantly kind of, you know what I mean? Like the way it shifts, you're like, mm-hmm, sometimes it's one, sometimes it's the other. Like sometimes it sounds like a real acoustic sound recorded, and other times it sounds like purely digital. And I feel like, you know, it essentially kind of moves through that. Sometimes there's lower feedback, but it's like, as a whole, I would describe that piece as like kind of electrical hum or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Occasionally it swells into like, you know, I wrote down like a evil version of like that THQ thing that happens before movies, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, THX.
Yeah, THX, yeah, whatever. Sometimes somewhere in there. The second one, I guess a lot of the same stuff, but it just feels a lot more like stop-start. Like, it will kind of do like a low, ominous whoosh kind of thing for a while, and then it kind of just stops, and then we'll get like a, you know, glitchy feedback ringing kind of sound, like cicadas, like made of metal or something like that for a while, and then it'll just stop. Some point we get like a pretty lush, what I would almost describe as like a synth tone, and that's kind of what I'm looking for. Like, that's where I perk up, is like, a little musicality to that. But then it'll just stop, and we're back to like a piercing feedback sound. And you're right that I think by the end it sounds something like a sputtering engine. So it's almost like the second one is a lot more of a mixed bag than the first one.
Yeah, and in fact, you know, you said, judging by the titles and maybe just in your mind, that the first one felt like Autechre, and you know, the second one, I kind of felt maybe the opposite, because I felt like the second one gets closer to musicality at times. I mean, like you said, I have a note here that at like 12 and a half minutes ish into the second track, that like it starts to sound like Astronomy Domini, you know, from Pink Floyd. It always feels like that song's like gonna start, but it never does. And even like the it's so hard to like talk about the actual sections, but I have one part here that it's like that really sort of horror movie sort of drone, but it's got like it's like windy noises, but you know that instrument that they use to make like sounds in horror movie, it's called a water phone, but I can't really imitate you would 100% like know exactly what it is. It's like that, any sort of scary noise, you know, when they're trying to build tension, it almost sounded like a water phone happening, you know, which is close to music. I just always felt like the second one was getting to that curve of musicality, but definitely never hits it. But also, the biggest problem, like, I think I like the individual, like, vignettes of two, you know, together, but it is so stop-start that it feels like, you know, six or seven little, you know, vignette tracks within this, where at least that first one, I did sort of feel like it's one, you know, like sort of buzzing tone that's shifting and moving into, I mean, it shifts into a lot of different things, but it just felt more together as one thing.
Yeah, because like the second one, it's not like, it doesn't feel in any way like it's building to anything. It's not like the next part like comments on or the previous one or anything. It's not like the ending is like some big crescendo we've worked toward. It just feels like a random series of sounds.
It's like if you were listening to it on vinyl and you didn't see that you're on the next track, I think you would just, every time you went to one of these little vignettes, you would think it's the next track, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, to the point about the Autechre thing, you know, and of course, I guess we're just going to be obligated to do this for each one, but I'm trying to see if we can hear Autechre's presence that well. You know, I agree that it's like sort of paradoxical, because the second one to me, because it has like slightly more musical moments, and again, like never truly musical, but just like implying musicality, that felt like a more Autechre-y thing to me. And yet the first one sounds, like, this is going to sound harsh, but it's like, it sounds more amateur noise time, you know, to me, where it makes me think, because I do not know, I should say, like, Mackenzie's larger body of work at all. You know, I'm not sure that this release makes me care to check out his larger body of work that much. But for some reason, I assume that he is a more seasoned noise veteran. And so the first track is like what I would do if I wanted to make a pure noise track. You know, I would just start with a tone and mess with it all the way through. And so for some reason, I have this like hunch that must be Autechre, because it sounds like the newcomer to making this kind of music, you know?
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good point. The fact that it's better, it means, you know, you're better at, or you know, you're worse at making things bad. I see what you mean, because I'm the same way. The only Hafler Trio thing I've ever heard is he has that record with Pansonic. It's like it's Pansonic and him and someone else. It has like Abraham Lincoln on the cover. But even that, it's probably my least favorite Panasonic record. I never listened to it. But yeah, that actually is a good point. And I could see that. I could see that definitely, you know, being Autechre the first one. I don't know. There's nothing that grabs me as like, oh, that's definitely an Autechre sound. You know what I mean?
Right,
like
there's
no, even though it's beatless, you know, still it's not like, oh, that, you know, that's a synth sound I've kind of heard before. Right. So like there's none of it.
Well, you know, so what I'm wondering is like to our earlier, you know, topic is like, does this work for you the same way other stuff in this genre does, like that pure stuff that you might actually enjoy listening to? And if not, why not?
I don't think so, because the thing is like, you know, when you talk about, you know, Pauline Oliveros and things like that, what's like so great about it is that they're experimenting in the truest sense of the word. You know, they are like literally inventing this. It's a little less cool when it's like already been invented and you're just doing it, you know. It's the same thing. Yeah. You know, people always bitch in art, like you know, Pollock, like, oh, that my kid could make a mess on a thing. It's like, but your kid didn't make a mess on a thing. Like, he invented doing that. That's impressive. I sort of feel like here, like this is someone splattering paint. You know, 50 years later, it's okay. You know, good for you. You know, if you want to hang it in your house, you know, go for it. But I don't really need to be involved.
Yeah. And there's something about, I mean, this is honestly like more true for some of the later ones. So maybe I should save it, but it's like, there's something about the approach here that I find very weird, which is like, it's trying to be as minimal as possible, it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
And you sometimes like zoom in on individual sounds and you can hear that there's a lot going on. Like, that's what I like when I'm listening to like this purely experimental stuff is it. What struck me at first as like just an ominous whoosh is actually like a low kind of like pulsating drone layered on top of like some kind of like very light rattling of, you know, what sounds like dinnerware or something is rattling. And then if you listen even closer, you can hear on top of that, like this kind of whining feedback that's kind of like, you know, bending up and down like ever so slowly. And like, you get a lot of that when you zoom way in, but when you're just listening to the piece, it's like so reserved and changing so slowly that you don't notice those. It's like does that make any sense? The design of the piece is meant to pull your attention away from even noticing the interesting little details, you know, because it's so motionless and like so still. And every sound on every single one of these releases is about as distant as you could possibly make it. I feel like the whole time I'm listening, he doesn't want me to listen.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell?
I know. I pretty much exclusively listen to this in headphones. And even then, like half the time, I feel like I'm listening it, you know, like my neighbor's playing it and I'm just overhearing it sort of. Yeah. It really like does all it can to make you not want to listen to this.
Like, what is the point of that? Why make music that?
Yeah, that I don't get at all. Because, you know, I completely understand, you know, why you would want to experiment. And I mean, it's literally just fun to make weird noises and stuff. Like, I understand all that, but yet to do that and then make it like where it's not hard to listen to in the sense that like it's noise, but hard to listen to in that like it's hard to hear.
Yeah. And I get like wanting to play with low volume and stuff. Like, that's a totally cool thing that is probably not done enough, but it's like, cause you know, you listen to like Pauline Oliveros and stuff. It's like usually ripping her head off the whole time, but you know, that's cool. But the whole thing is so down low that it's like, you actually cannot help. I feel like he wants me to stop paying attention, like lose focus on the thing. It is so bizarre. Now, listener Joe wrote in to say, we didn't get a lot of emails on these.
I'm shocked.
Yeah. But listener Joe wrote in to say, I'm guessing that the way I feel about these releases is how 95% of the world feels about Autechre in general. I can appreciate that there is great musical value here. And I know there are people out there who are all about this, but I doubt I'm ever going to be able to enjoy this kind of thing as much as I appreciate it. So do you at least appreciate it in that kind of disconnected way Joe is describing and kind of in the way that, you know, you were alluding to earlier with some of the like really experimental stuff that you just kind of like in theory?
Yeah, I get that. I don't know if I feel that here. Like, I don't feel like, you know, that stuff I like in theory, it's because I, you know, that stuff, it's awesome to like read about. Like, I think I've talked about it on here before. It's like, what's interesting about it is the like process and you know, like just the way the sounds are made and stuff. Here, nothing is like intriguing enough for me to even like care to look it up or anything. I mean, not that you really even can. I mean, there's not a ton of info on these releases, but it's just like there's, you know, what's fun about some, you know, some of that other stuff is like the like, you know, intellectualism of it. Like I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head, but like one time my wife went to Chicago and she brought me back some weird record, and it was this these like electroacoustic brothers, and they built their own instruments that were like made out of crystals and all this stuff, and it actually does sound kind of cool, but it is actually a pretty good record, but you know, it's like. The thing she got me, it was like, it came with like a little booklet, like telling you about it. And then, you know, I read a bunch of stuff online about it, you know, like that was super interesting. I really wish I could remember off the top of my head without getting the record. But, you know, I just, none of that is there, especially this first, I'm speaking especially about this, you know, first release. It's just this. I mean, honestly, when we first started getting ready for this podcast, you know, I listened to this first one first, which is only 31 minutes. And I was like, oh, my God, I got 4.5 hours left of this garbage, you know. You know, we'll get to if it picks up or not. Spoiler, it doesn't much. But, you know, it was just I never feel like those kind of things, you know. I can listen to, you know, I like to a lot of times, some of the record stores I go to have like a weird, you know, a section just called weird.
Right.
And I like to sometimes, you know, if I find like something's $2, $3, $5 or something, you know, it's got a cool cover, I'll buy it. And, you know, it's always like, I can at least sit through it. You know, it's maybe not something I want to hear all the time, but there's at least like interesting enough things where I'm like, you know, 30 minutes, you know, just a 12 inch or something is like no problem to get through or anything. But here it was, it's literally like difficult to.
Yeah. It's like, you know, people always say this and it kind of bugs me, but like when people don't understand like the experimental music they're listening to, and I don't mean that as a dig, like it's just genuinely not their thing.
Yeah.
Like, they describe it as like a test of patience or something like that. And that always bugs me. But this is one time where I really feel like it is deliberately trying to test my patience. Mm-hmm. Like, because it is so distant and like so still that, like I said earlier, I feel like he genuinely wants you to like lose focus on it. And that is, I don't know, such a drag to listen to. I also like, you know, to your earlier point, I like the process side of a lot of this stuff. I do think that's important. And some of my favorite parts of this 2003 release are what I was describing earlier, is like where I'm listening to that first track and I'm like, this sounds like recorded. Like, this sounds like actual metallic objects. And then it just slowly shifts to where I start to question that. And I'm like, wait a minute, this sounds like digitally created, you know? And I like that because I'm thinking about how it was made, but it's so subtle. And then we stick with like that one sound for so long that it's just like, I don't know, that brought me like 2 minutes of enjoyment out of like, you know, a 30 minute thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I same thing on the second track on this first one, that I you sort of mentioned it, you know, where it sounded like crickets or cicadas, you know, some nighttime. Yeah. I couldn't tell if it like was a digital, you know, recreation of something like that, or if it was like just recording outside, but then the gain turned up like so loud that it's turned a bit down. And yeah, again, however long that section lasts, I did have like a, you know, I was really trying to like listen close to hear if it was digital or just the gain cranked, you know. But
yeah,
that doesn't sustain over this long of a release, you know.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, that happens here and there throughout this whole project. Like, you know, jumping ahead to the 2011 one, there's a moment where a similar moment where like it sounds like insect sounds. And I really feel like it's a field recording of somebody like outside. And then those insect sounds like pitch way up all of a sudden. And it's like a great surprise to realize like, wait, I think I was fake the whole time. Like, so I really like those moments, but they're few and far between. And also the last point to like Joe's question or comment here is just that, you know, he's saying like, I can appreciate that there's great musical value here. And I feel like we are like we're not like the hugest fans of experimental music, but we're like in the 99th percentile. Like we listen to a lot more than most people. And I just felt confident saying that like this is not as good as the good shit in that genre. Like it, like I just I don't feel like I don't know. I sense in Joe's comment what I think a lot of people probably do when they hear this is like they start to get like a pleb imposter syndrome, you know, where they start to feel like, oh, maybe this is too deep for me. But like, don't overthink it. Like it's just really fucking boring.
Yeah, I've read a lot of books. I've listened to a lot of experimental music. I've wasted a lot of my life on shit that nobody cares about. And this ain't it, you know?
Yeah. And even if you haven't, I think you can trust your gut on that. So we talked a little bit about like if we can hear Autechre's presence and kind of like the uncertainty of that. But I wanted to ask, like, specifically, what do you make of Sean's kind of comment that they deferred to Andrew and just plagiarized his style? I mean, what do you think about like that approach, you know?
I mean, if this is a split, then that sort of makes sense. In you know, if going back to like your you know, idea of that first one being them like, you know, sort of imposter impersonating, you know, like a noise artist, it does sort of sound like that. So I can understand that. Also, the way he might mean it is like, we always did this when you make music. You hear something you like, and then you try to make it yourself, and then you can't, so it sounds different. Like, maybe that's the sort of thing, you know, that he means too. Or, you know, also it could just be him being humble and stuff too, even though I don't know if there's much to be humble about here.
I just thought it was like an interesting comment because, you know, we talked all about Guestcom and... You know, the feeling I get there is that Autechre are like the leads on that. And even if there really are a lot of other people, or like when there are other people involved, it feels like everybody kind of bends to the will of Autechre because they are like the most talented in the bunch. And the project becomes like very Autechre-y just because when people are around geniuses like Autechre, it just is going to happen.
Yeah.
And so it's just really weird to hear like, you know, I don't know if like Mackenzie would have been fine with calling this a Guestcom project or something, but like otherwise it would meet all the qualifications, except Autechre is clearly not in the driver's seat. And so like it's fitting that it's not a Guestcom project, you know? And so it's just weird. I feel like other than this, I can't even think really of like an Autechre release where they are not in the driver's seat of it. So that is like kind of a unique thing. Now, listener Marius wrote, "This is probably the farthest AE have ever strayed from their own sound. I suspect the very austere and ambient textures present there might have been an influence on some of the background ambience on Untilted and on more ambient minimal pieces on Choristus as well." So does listening to this help you understand AE's mindset in the mid-2000s any better? You know, was it kind of like some of those Guestcom releases where like maybe they were experimenting with stuff that you can actually hear show up on their records around this time?
I don't know if there was anything I, you know, specifically could grab onto and you know, put as being from the records, but I could see that, you know, like playing in the world of experimentation, like I think could make them want to experiment, you know, the way they do at that point in the career. But the specific sounds, I really don't think I could, you know, I don't think I could place this in a year or anything without looking at it.
Yeah, I think it might be a little bit more true, so we can talk about it again, but like a little bit more true of some of the other releases here. But, you know, I guess it feels like it's forcing it a little bit, but there are some moments where it's like quite a dry, buzzy sound, and then quite suddenly it becomes like a much bigger, like more spacious kind of thing. And you know, it's one of my favorite parts about Untilted is that all the sounds are really quite dry, but then there will just be these moments of like insane lushness, like deep underneath, or sometimes they'll even swell to like kind of take over. So I don't know. It feels like a stretch, but maybe I can hear some of that play with like the size of sounds in there. You know, I've got to ask you about the packaging, but first let me read more from listener Joe, who writes, "I first became aware of this collaboration when I saw one of these sets in my local record store. It was something I considered buying many times due to how beautiful the packaging looked, but it cost something insane and I could never justify it, especially since I had no idea how it sounded. I didn't seem to be the only one who felt this way. The last time I checked the same record store years later, that same exact disc was sitting on the same exact shelf. When the vinyl re-release was announced, I was very torn about whether or not to order it, having never heard the music before. It seemed very beautifully put together. together, and I had a feeling that I would regret it if I didn't order the box set the same way I've always regretted not getting the Choristus vinyl when it came out. I was almost relieved when it sold out within a few hours of going up on pre-sale, so the decision was taken out of my hands altogether. No, I will not be buying a used copy on Discogs. This kind of applies to all the installments, so maybe we just have to have this conversation once, but they obviously kind of present themselves as collector's items. You know, they are all like extremely limited edition, like a few thousand copies, quite elaborate packaging. So what do you think about that packaging and presentation? Does it add anything to the release?
I think it does, you know, definitely add, you know, something. I think you could accuse things like this, you know, true or not, of being like just lazy, you know, throwaway noise things. But when you like put the effort into the, you know, the packaging of it, I think it does like sort of show that you're more serious about it, you know.
Right.
You know, it's the same kind of way, you know, when you see somebody with their Bandcamp page or something, they've just got some, you know, shitty picture from their phone as the cover.
Right.
I'm not really interested. But if they, you know, took the time to make something that looks nice, you know, I'll be more into it. So I will say that I think the presentation here is, you know, very important.
Yeah, kudos to them on this. I think this is key for anybody who's into making experimental music. Like, you must, you must put a lot of effort into the presentation, because, like, you know, you mentioned like bad iPhone picture covers of like these noise artists that release like 20 albums a year they're putting out, and it's all just like the stupidest, shittiest thing. And then not to mention like all these local noise shows we've been to where people are just selling CDRs, you know, and like there's no like, why would I bother?
Like just a like no packaging or anything, you know. At least stick it in a sleeve and draw me something or something, you know.
Yeah. And it's like, if you give it like quite elaborate packaging or presentation, you know, I think it's just really important, because it does sort of like, this music tends to sound lazy and tossed off, and the good stuff still feels that way at first glance, you know, but then it's like when you dig in, there's actually a lot to discover there. And the packaging is like usually your cue, like, is it worth putting in the effort? You know, they can kind of gesture toward, you know, some kind of grander meaning or something in a way that just gives you that little extra encouragement to keep searching, right? And of course, there has to be like a pot of gold at the end of that rainbow, right?
For that to
work. But there, it could be the best thing ever hiding in all that noise, and I'm never going to find it if you haven't put any effort into the presentation.
If you can't put effort into it, why should I, give you, you know, my time? Yeah, exactly. So I will even say, and I don't say this often, but I'm kind of even glad that these aren't on Spotify and stuff, because I think that you know, that packaging and presentation is so important, that it is kind of a, you know, a physical media thing. Like if I ended up really enjoying these releases, you know, since we did just listen to downloads, as we talk about how important the packaging is. But, you know, if I really like these, I honestly, like, because the packaging is so cool and thoughtful, like, I would try to hunt them down, you know, if they were, you know, reasonably priced. I didn't even look, so I don't know how expensive these are, but
yeah,
you know, like, things like that are very important, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think this part they nailed. I just don't think it really delivers. So any closing thoughts on this 2003 release, or should we move right on to the next one?
Just that I'm glad I'll never listen to that again. All right, the second installment released by Die Stat in 2005 is much longer than the first, at a length of about 80 minutes. Again, it's highly elaborate and highly limited CD release, this time containing several pages of, quote, baffling text, to quote the Wire's review, seemingly composed entirely of non sequiturs. The copyright on the first disc reads, "All rights reserved, that's not your date. Nope." And the one on the second disc reads, "All rights reserved, tip not included, leave it under the plate, please." Fittingly, this is probably the most mysterious of the Hafler releases. The Wire complains that Ottaker's role is overly passive, and that the album is stubbornly, needlessly arcane. And fans on Rate Your Music have rated it right down the middle for an average of 2.55.
Yeah, so it's tempting to say this is just more of the same, but can you hear any difference at all in the overall sound palette here?
I mean, it definitely doesn't, you know, I wouldn't get them confused as the same pieces or anything. You know, I think we're getting There's a lot more play with silence in this one.
Yeah.
I think, you know, in between these vignettes, you often hit like these, you know, just sort of long periods of silence, which, you know, will happen again in the next one also. Yeah. But I did think there were some more like interesting kind of sounds in this one. You know, there was some sort of sections I felt like, you know, got close to being, you know, kind of dark ambient sort of things, which, you know, we definitely don't get on the first one. Even like kind of just looking through my notes a little bit, but there's I think maybe some more interesting sounds and kind of experiments here.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that, you know, if we assume that the first one is Autechre, which we can talk more about that, but I just sort of did because it starts with the letter A, you know, it's like the first piece kind of pulls a neat trick in that it starts with, and of course, everything is extremely distant to where you can barely hear it and have to listen extremely close to hear anything, but very distant, like chiming synth tones that actually form something approaching like chords and notes. Mm-hmm. Like it is quite dreamy. It is quite lush. It is like kind of reverb drenched. And there's some like deep kind of pulsating thuds in there too. It's like quite nice. And then it kind of turns into like this kind of bubbling sound that still has like a kind of musicality and like a rhythmic quality to it. Like, this early part sounds like kind of what I wanted from this project. And that
completely agree.
It sounds like an Autechre track that has been kind of like destroyed and like blown up. And you're just seeing like
completely deconstructed.
Yeah. Like the particles that are left over after this, you know, it moves into like a really watery kind of drone thing as it gets like less and less musical, unfortunately, but like, it really kind of reminds me of like in a movie, you know, when the character like goes underwater or something.
Yeah.
You know, like
that's what I wrote on my thing. Underwater transitions. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we get like even like bubbly sounds up in there. And then eventually we get like some quite, I don't know, like these weird fluttery, glitchy, like they sound like those kind of laser sounds that you can get out of any synth, you know, except for they are like so, they're so like thin and it just sounds more like, I don't know, some like wild, I don't even know how to describe it, like just fluttery, like something, you know, sputters out, turns into like just pure glitch. And I don't know, it just kind of ends like in a dull kind of like typical kind of glitchy, like sputtering way. But there was like some promise in that. You know, the second one also kind of starts off with some like kind of super distant, like cosmic chords that are quite pretty, but then like just quickly cuts to, I don't know, I've written down stuff like that could be like a weed whacker, like your neighbor is like just working on the lawn. You know, there's some like some ringing and stuff. There's like there's a neat part in the middle where there like these like big, it sounds like big metal sheets like just being shook every once in a while, like breaking up the silence. You get some like howling wind kind of sound. Again, very, very quiet, but just sounds like it's very windy outside of like some shack you're sitting in or something. You know, again, a little aimless, but I did find overall the variation of sound to be quite refreshing on this one.
Yeah. I'll agree with that. And the weed whacker thing, I did, you know, sitting at home at night, you know, listening to this in headphones, often had to play the game of, is this the music or is this, you know, somebody outside, you know, about to spook me or something. That distant thing really, maybe that's the trick it's supposed to play on you. I'm not sure, but I did feel like that, it sort of felt like there was a bit more, cohesion between the two pieces here. I felt like some of the synth sounds kind of were in both of them. You know, it's so hard to describe exactly, you know, what something sounded like, but you know, I just felt like, you know, some of the those early, you know, piano like things, like you know, that there was like a really, you know, sort of like haunted house, like horror movie sort of synth, and I felt like that, you know, peaked its way into both pieces. So that's cool, because I do really feel the first one, the first record, is a big problem with it is that there's like no cohesion at all, you know. But this one definitely felt, you know, more of a record.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, you know, to that point, I wanted to kind of ask you, like, this is obviously a lot longer. It's like 80-something minutes. Like, do you think something is gained by kind of really stretching out? You know, we often talk about, like, when it comes to experimental music, like, I want to sit in it for a while. You know, I find that because there's so much variation, it doesn't give you that same kind of, like, let me you know, zone out to this, like, cohesive thing. But, you know, the two pieces do complement each other a little bit, as you said. So, like, do you feel like this kind of really stretching out worked in any way?
In the sense that, you know, you got more of the little vignette songs, and so just, you know, by pure chance, I think a bigger number of them were not annoying to me. But yeah, I mean, we do often say how, you know, experimental music, I don't want to hear a 2-minute drone, you know, I want an hour drone or something. But I feel like that's sort of the problem here. Even though this one is 82 minutes, they never stick to one of these things like long enough to live in it. Cause you know, that's what I like about, you know, Tony Conrad and things like that. Like, I like to, you know, lay in bed, close my eyes, drift off to sleep, you know, with it, or even read a book and, you know, just be in that, you know, it can almost like soundtrack what you're reading, you know, or something. You know, here it's just, it's switching so much that even though it's 82 minutes, it just feels like, you know, whereas the last one maybe had 10 or 15, you know, little tracks, this one has 20, 30, or, you know, whatever the numbers are. I don't know that it worked as great here. I mean,
yeah. I mean, it allowed the variation to kind of be like less jarring, which I kind of liked.
Yeah.
Also, like, a funny thing happened where, because, you know, I listened to this, like, a ton over the last couple of weeks, and, you know, just before recording, I was just kind of, like, skimming through each track to kind of remind myself which is which, even though I'm not even, like, 100% sure that I mastered that. But, like, toward the end of the second piece here, there is kind of, like, a, you know, it sounds like the tones of, like, after you hit a bell, except for it just, like, runs, you know, eternally. And it, like, if you skip through, you notice that actually kind of the note, like the pitch is changing slowly on that thing. Like, if you get what I mean? Like, you kind of skip through, you hear like, actually the pitch is like totally different. And it's so weird because they've stretched it out so much that you actually don't notice that it's changed at all, which is funny because I feel like on the first record, they did that similar trick where the thing just slowly evolves, but it evolved fast enough that you noticed. But here it's so slow that it might as well not change because I did not notice that it was changing.
That is one thing I thought about because, you know, that's what I enjoy about like Nightblock is like, you know, it'll be like a held tone and it... You get in that thing, it's like, is my mind pretending it's changing or is it changing? You know, I never really like got in the here. It just always felt like it wasn't changing. But you're right, because I did the same thing, you know, skipped through just as a reminder. And I had that same realization that it's much more obvious that it's changing. But I sort of thought like that's kind of neat. You know, I didn't notice that. But then again, if it's so... you know, obscured that you don't even notice is it worth doing? Which I guess is a fun, you know, question to think about. But I don't know. I think I'm just trying to jam something fun to think about, you know, on this record in there, you know?
Yeah. It's like, I don't know, like looking at like a landscape or something like, yes, it's technically like changing over millions of years or whatever, but like to me, it's just still.
Yeah. You know? Exactly. That's a good analogy.
So yeah, there's a lot of that in here. You know, I wanted to ask you if you had any more luck identifying like what exactly Autechre brought to the collaboration. But first, let me read this from listener Joe, who shared some comments that could honestly apply to any of the releases here. Joe writes, I think the biggest difference between this kind of ambient drone and something like Easter or All End, where the underlying musical sample is repeated in permutations or stretched out, is that the underlying sounds in those tracks are far more interesting to begin with. This stuff is so utterly minimalist that there's just not much to grab onto. You guys have made a great case over and over again that in a lot of their 2010s work, the hook is some kind of interesting piece or sound design rather than a melody. But I feel like although this project is an exercise in sound design, it's lacking those kinds of interesting Hook. So do you agree with that?
Yeah, 100%. I think that's, you know, a great point, because yeah, nothing here really ever gives me that, you know, just because you can create some odd sounds I've never heard before doesn't make them interesting. And yeah, just nothing here am I ever like, there was no section where I was like, I gotta hear that again, I gotta hear, you know, more of that noise. You know, like there's definitely things I was like, oh, what is that? But it was just sort of like, I don't know, whatever. Whereas, like, you know, some of the some other things that are more interesting, you know, I'll get like real, like, oh, you know, really think about, you know, listen to it over and over, you know, like really try to dig into it. And here it's just like nothing was interesting enough to care enough about it to get to that. Yeah, it's just like extreme minimalism.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of felt like similar to the last one, and maybe even better here, which is that if you do kind of zoom way in on one like individual moment, you'll hear that there's actually a lot more to the sound than like what you thought was just sort of like some whoosh, you know. There actually are a couple layers going on and like things to dig out. But I think the idea here is like Joe is describing, like them using interesting sounds as a hook. A hook means it hooks you.
Yeah,
like it means I don't have to pull out my microscope and like search for some interesting thing about it. You are actually, like, when you listen to Easter or you listen to All In, I think you are immediately arrested by the striking sound of it.
Exactly.
And then you're in it. Then you're sticking with it for that whole time, you know? And of course there's lots of different permutations, and it's an interesting sound that you are interested in hearing develop over the next 20 minutes or an hour, you know?
Mm-hmm,
here,
exactly.
You're not really interested. And, you know, I find that like in all these projects, actually, it's like, or this whole project, like if you kind of just were to pick like a random timestamp and listen to like 2 minutes really closely and then turn it off, you probably have more fun of a time than if you like try to listen to the whole thing, because
yeah
there's something like just a little neat about these little moments, but it's just so long and again so distant. Here you mentioned like much more use of just pure silence almost, that it feels like it's just constantly trying to disappear. It is trying to fade into the background and like trying to get you to stop paying attention. That's the opposite of a hook.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's so much so I was thinking, you know, about it, like it's almost, and I was kind of sitting on this because I think it applies a little bit more to the next release, but you know, whatever. It's almost like it just should be playing in an art gallery. And you're like, you're just supposed to only hear a second of it, you know, or a couple minutes of it. Like it's got very, you know, art installation energy kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely even more true here. And like, I got to say that, and this also kind of applies more to the 2011 thing, which we'll talk about more in a minute. But like, I felt kind of genuinely like I had never heard something quite like that before, which is like, I would be listening and I would genuinely forget that I'm listening to music. And I should say that like this never happens to me, because I'm like the kind of person, I want music playing all the time.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Like when music is not playing, like when a track ends, I notice immediately because I'm like annoyed to not be hearing music. But it would be so subtle, like it would be like a, you know, 10-minute fade out to silence, to the point where I would actually not realize that there was no music playing. And then it like slowly emerges with like a light rumble, which if I'm listening on speakers could just be the air conditioning or something, you know? And then like, it was like music would just appear. Like it would just like appear out of the air, like in, like out of like I would just suddenly, it would just come to my realization that, oh, actually music has been playing again for the last 5 minutes, you know? Like how did that sneak up on me like that? And I found that like, that was very, like maybe more appropriate for an art installation. But I did find that in this release and even more in the next release, like there was something kind of neat about that, like how it actually did pull off the trick that nobody pulls on me of like disappearing without me noticing and then reappearing.
Yeah, I don't know if it was as effective with me, because I was like reading a bunch, like doing this, and I would, you know, I'm playing it on my phone in headphones. And, you know, reading, and I'd be like, oh, is it over? You know, and like I kept, you know,
it's
I kept doing
with
that.
Headphones, I think.
I think that's true. But yeah, it's blocking out the, I think you're right. You know, like when you have that, like, is that the air conditioner? Is that the, you know, the right. music that does work a bit better. But yeah, I mean, that is a trick. I'll give them that.
Yeah. Again, something weird about making music that is like designed to trick me into forgetting that mm-hmm. it is playing. Like, something kind of counterproductive about that. Now, Joe also adds, Autechre and Andrew McKenzie are considered correctly considered colleagues, and both occupy the same field of music. But I think the biggest difference between Sean and Rob and these kinds of artists is that no matter how far into the deep end of electroacoustic-ish music concretish stuff they go, they have always and will always come from a hip-hop mentality that defines their approach to music and even their least hip-hop tracks. McKenzie comes from a completely different mindset and musical starting point. This kind of got me thinking, like, do you feel like the different approaches of Autechre and McKenzie are, like, just simply irreconcilable? Like, one would always have to defer to the other? Or can you imagine a better project with more of Autechre's DNA in it without it becoming, you know what I mean, like, just... Mm-hmm. Autechre moments with McKenzie moments.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I think it's even harder to penetrate like a duo like Autechre. You know, like they're two people who have like clearly been friends for, you know, a bulk of their life, you know, at that point. It's just like you just sort of, you know, get where you understand each other. You know, any like other person that comes into that mix, I think would be like hard to work with. And then to be coming from two different, you know, worlds like that, even makes it harder. I don't know if it's completely like, you know, irreconcilable or whatever, but it's definitely like, I think very, very difficult.
It's just hard to imagine because it's like, if any beats appeared, I'd be like, that's
Autechre. Yeah, exactly.
Caught him.
Caught him. Yeah. You know? Red-handed. Yeah, exactly.
If any like beautiful like musicality suddenly emerged, no matter how, you know, no matter how minimal it was, I would be like, there they are. There's my boys, you know? And like, it's hard to imagine a proper synthesis between these two. And I think what we get, right, is like, Autechre truly completely deferring to the style of McKenzie. And it's just hard to imagine like what an actual proper synthesis could be.
Yeah, I mean, because I think if you take it the other way and you had Autechre, you know, make some stuff, and then you had McKenzie, you know, throw his noise, electroacoustic stuff on top of it, it'd be the same way. You'd say, oh, well, it's Autechre, right, but this guy's, you know, throwing something on top. So it is... very difficult. In fact, like, as much as I don't really enjoy any of these records, I will say that it takes like some guts and, you know, some fortitude to do what Autechre's done here, to like so completely you know, fade into the background.
Yeah.
You know, that is like it shows like some respect and some, you know, gall to even try it. I you know, I don't know that, yeah, how well it works, but I mean, there's something in even trying it.
Yeah, I feel like Joe gets at a good point, which is just that like what we're trying to do with this project is, or what we want from it is like a synthesis of one group that uses experimental, you know, sound design to create, you know, often hip hop, or like to create something, you know, with it. And the other one just uses experimental sound design.
Yeah.
And so it's like a combination is just going to be the deletion of that interesting half of Autechre. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that, like, I can't imagine what else it could be. You know, to that point, I think, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but like, if we can hear, you know, the influence of Autechre, or on Autechre's music or anything like that, you know, I think I start to hear on this one a little bit more of that, like, those kind of metallic, clangy, like, you know, electroacoustic kind of sounds that I start to hear maybe, like, on the kind of AE Live sets a lot. And so, like, I feel like they go through a little phase of, like, being obsessed with, like, making electronic sounds sound, yeah, like metal clanging, you know? And I feel like I start to hear that. So maybe there was some play with that. But any closing thoughts on this 2005 release? Are we ready to move on to the last one?
I think I'm ready to move on. This third and last installment, released by Die Stott in 2011, is the weirdest of the bunch. It's 4 hours long, and it was only released on DVD, again, with highly elaborate packaging. The label explains it is essential to use a 5.1 surround sound system in order to experience the work in the intended manner. Both discs provide Dolby Digital and DTS 5.1 soundtracks. Of the two, DTS is the technically superior audio standard, so a surround amplifier capable of decoding DTS will give the best results. I should mention that we did not do any of that. We didn't actually listen in 5.1. We opted for the recent vinyl reissues, which we listened to in MP3 all the albums instead. But Sean and Rob might be in the same boat, because in a podcast interview with McKenzie around the time of this installment's release, Sean explained that he's not heard the 5.1 mix either, because he doesn't know anyone without kids who has that kind of setup. at least he's respectful. McKenzie has also said that this release should make the previous two glow again with renewed ardoir and provide a couple of answers, but many, many more questions. So maybe this entire project would actually make some sense if we hunted down a 5.1 system, but I doubt it.
And I'll just add that this is obviously the least heard of the Hafler collabs. It's got 50 ratings on Radio Music and an average of 2.81. The Wire's review is a little complimentary, I guess. It says that all the defining characteristics of both artists have basically disappeared, and what's left, quote, turns your room into an installation space. The audio is beautiful but featureless, which makes it more like an aspect of architecture, a thing in the room with you, than music. So what's new about the sound palette this time?
Well, I think here we get some more like kind of effect sounds. Like I felt like there was like some bit crushing going on, like definitely some stretching of like sounds from their normal speed. It sounded like, you know, even some, I don't know, more like synthy kind of noises being used, like, you know, getting closer to like things that are recognizable as instruments. Don't get me wrong, there's still plenty of wind going on for a long time, and things like that. Even in the second half of the record, there's even like a very short, you know, speaking loop that happened. There's definitely some different sounds going on here a bit.
Yeah, I feel like this one is, I don't know, it feels like a like it's really embracing the stretched out, you know, size of the thing, in that there are probably, honestly, less ideas here than on the 2005 release, maybe even than the 2003 release as well. But they spend so much time with them that it really kind of like dulls your senses, and then occasionally will, I think, much more deliberately surprise you, like with a change up, you know, like that seems to be a little bit more of the point here. You know, like the first track, it starts off with, I don't know, what is like, you know, I would describe as like kind of an ominous whoosh, but then it really starts to resemble like a really heavy rain, like on your roof or something, like that kind of a sound. And it just kind of grows like louder and louder. And that's it for 20 minutes. You know what I mean? Like that's all we do for the first 20 minutes of this release. Hard cut to like kind of a ringing, you know, like, what are they, like those Tibetan like singing bowl things, you know what I mean? Like that kind of a thing with a low drone. You know, maybe like just some strange glitch that kind of sounds like, I don't know, like a field recording of like a truck engine just running or something like that, but like really low quality. And it'll all just kind of like, I guess what's interesting about this piece is that it will occasionally just return to that heavy rain sound in a way that implies like a structure to the piece, you know, like it's meant to kind of like move away and then come back to where it started a couple times, which I do appreciate. It sounds less random than the first one, but it is so stretched out that you cannot help but sort of lose focus. And then in the very quiet moments, of which there are many, and this applies to both pieces, really, it like really blurs the lines between composition and I accidentally left the mic on for a while, you know, like there is nothing happening.
Yeah.
Just like what maybe is like somebody's lawnmower three blocks away. You know what I mean?
Yeah. In fact, I mean, to go back to sort of what we were talking about a little earlier, it's the thing that kind of stops my enjoyment of the, you know, this project in general, but especially this release. There's moments on this album that I genuinely really enjoy. In fact, when I sort of like think back at it and I just think of those little moments, I don't think about like, oh, sometimes you have to listen to a lawnmower, you know, across the street, you know, in your house, recorded. You know, I think like, oh, maybe I actually like this one. But then when I actually listen to it, I remember, oh, no, I don't. It's like there's so many of these like cool like little moment like on the first piece, like there's like it gets real like a shimmery kind of drone, and the pitch is like very slowly changing, but in a way that's perceivable, and then like that, you know, you could almost get lost in it and stuff, you know, like those are those little moments where it's like, yeah this is the kind of you know, drone or experimental stuff I want. In fact, like that section, it really reminded me of like, you know, Lamont Young has this like place in New York, it's called the Dream House, where he lives. Mm-hmm. And it's this big art installation, and I went one time, and it was just like you sat in this room and like these lights were on the wall, and then this like shimmery drone would like very, very, very slowly, you know, change. It was like set. Mm-hmm. He gave you like this little book to read about it. And it was like, I don't know, some shit with the stars or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, but again, like, you know, the presentation of it was what made it interesting. And even the little story. But, you know, it like reminded me of stuff like that, which, you know, I actually enjoyed a lot and thought was really, you know, kind of cool. You know, it was like this one, so many times I feel like we're like almost there. We're almost gonna get that kind of stuff,
yeah.
And then it just like something happens to change it. You know, it just like sort of peters out, like they left the mic on, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. It just kind of like vanishes, like it just dissipates before your ears, really.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And it's just nothing. And you know, this is the one where I really started to, I feel like appreciate is the wrong word, but like at least acknowledge that trick of like, you got me. I forgot that I was listening to music,
yeah.
You know, and then it'll do this kind of thing where it'll like sometimes like kind of surprise you. Like when that like heavy rain returns, you know, it's like a little bit of a shock, or like there's a part, you know, there are parts in the second piece where it's just like, you know, it just feels like nothing is happening for such a long time. And then this kind of weird bendy loopy noise emerges. There's another part where like an actual shaker appears, you know, and it mm-hmm. just feels like it kind of snaps your attention back. And so I felt like there was something there about like the size of this thing and like how long it will stay. And I agree, it's like there are moments like that bendy loopy kind of thing that happens in the second piece.
Yeah,
like I think that's a cool moment.
That,
but
I, if you,
it'll last for so long and then doesn't really resolve or build to anything.
Exactly,
you know.
And if we're talking about the same thing, like it's like they hold like a bass note for a really long time, and then that wobbly like thing. It sounds like somebody like just hitting like a regular, you know, electric bass guitar, but then it being like time stretched so much, and that is like super rad. I was like,
yeah,
this is what I'm here for. But then it doesn't pay off at all. Like it never builds anything. It never comes back. It just is another, you know, vignette tossed in the wind kind of thing.
Yeah. And like this one has that thing I mentioned earlier, which is like, there are several minutes where I really feel like you are just hearing like a you know, somebody's Tascam outside. Like you, mm-hmm. it sounds like you're hearing definitely. Cicadas or something, you know, just bugs, and you kind of lose focus because it's just nothing. But then all of a sudden that like insect sound like bends way up and you're like, oh, was that like digital the whole time? And it's like a neat little surprise. I feel like there's just more use of surprises here, more of like lulling you into sleep or something, and then like kind of shocking you a little bit. Like in reading about McKenzie, I have heard, and I just don't hear a lot of evidence of this on these releases, but like I've heard that this is what he kind of likes to do because he wants people to like pay attention. So he likes to like do these very elongated, you know, pieces with little things that are meant to like, you know, kind of give you a little
snap
shock to the system, like wake you up. Yeah. And I hear a lot more of that here than I did on the other ones, even though it's still pretty distant and still pretty small, you know.
In fact, speaking on that, at the end of the whole record, you know, it's like this really pleasant drone for a while, and then it's like these clocks, you know, you're like, are these ticking clocks? And then it was like really, that got really nice, and I was like, I'm enjoying this. And then jump scare. The alarm clock goes off and it ends the record. Yeah. Like that I could have done without.
I actually got very angry about that. I felt like that was very obnoxious because like I started to feel like, because you're right. It turns into like a lot of sort of like that shaker starts to become actually pretty rhythmic, and there's like some different clacks going on. And it sounds like some kind of mechanical clock, and it goes on for quite a long time in a way that's like actually quite neat. And then, it erupts in like this very abrasive, like alarm going off. And, you know, I started to feel like, okay, is this like, fuck you, honestly, because it's like, you're making boring as shit music. And then you're jump scaring me when I stop paying attention. I stopped paying attention because your music sucks, bro. Like, that's why I lost focus. And now you're like playing this little prank on me. Like, hey, wake up, pleb, pay attention. Like that actually pissed me off. And I gotta say, like, it's just that last moment that really pissed me off, because that's like the most obnoxious one. Some of the other little surprises I think are fun and neat, but there are moments of like very harsh, like kind of glitching or like very shrill high noises that will like kind of appear for a moment. And just thinking back on the whole thing, I was like, what a dick. Like, if you want me to pay attention, make good music, you know, don't scare me.
I didn't get quite as angry as you did. but yeah, no, exactly. Like I don't like jump scares. It's the like the cheesiest, you know, way to scare somebody, I think. And exactly. Like if you want to have my attention, like earn it, you know. It's not that it's 2 hours that's bothering me. I there's plenty of stuff I like that's very long. I got no problem with the length. You know, I could pay attention to NTS the whole time. Because it's interesting, you know, especially in this second one. I mean, there's just like, if you look on like Rate Your Music, it has like tracks listed, and like some of them are just literally called. So I don't know if that's like an official thing, but there's just like sections that are just labeled as silence. Like, they're back to back. It's like 4 minutes or something of things just labeled silence. Maybe don't do that if you want me to pay attention, you know?
Yeah, and like I said, like just like on the previous releases, except for much more here, it feels like the intention is to get me to stop paying attention, right? To like lose focus and forget I'm listening to music and stop paying attention, and then to scare me back into paying attention until I inevitably get bored. And yeah, I like lots of really long stuff, like a well-tuned piano or whatever. Like
all this shit
that is like incredibly long. Love it. But they don't have to like scare me into like paying attention again, because I don't lose focus, because it actually is interesting. Now, speaking of that kind of like mechanical clock part, which I like before the motherfucking alarm clock, do you think we're missing something by not listening in 5.1? Because I really felt that part, like it doesn't like come through totally just in stereo, you know, but like very clear that those mechanical kind of like clicking sounds are meant to kind of move around the room, you know? And, you know, it's hard to imagine, like other moments that would work that like, obviously. But I can certainly imagine that like just kind of blending into the room effect that some of these like quieter moments have, and then kind of surprising you like that would be like, you know, tripled if it jumped out from like one direction or something. So do you feel like there's something like really important about listening in 5.1 truly?
I mean, possibly because I even in some of my notes a little bit before the clock thing, I could tell like, cause I pretty much always listened in headphones. You could tell it was like going in a circle. Like there, it was just like a drone kind of like spinning. And that was like what really made me think of like the art installation thing. You know, cause I could see like a room, you know, surrounded with speakers or something, you know? And so like, yeah, I think it would probably be more interesting, but I don't know. 5.1, it sort of seems like, 3D movies, which to me, it's just a trick. It's kind of, it's a little cheesy. It's a little stupid. It's just, you can't, Remember that that Flaming Lips album that it's like you gotta have like five CD players,
yeah,
like,
right.
And like the Pitchfork review was like, "Fuck you, I don't own five CD players." Fuck right. You, nobody has 5.1 sound system. So it's like saying like, "Oh, I wrote this album, it's great, but it only sounds good if you listen to it on this thing that no one owns." You know, it's like, okay, yeah, well, right. So it doesn't sound great because like, I don't own a fucking movie theater, you know? Like, who?
I know. You hear that? Like, I always hear this shit, like, about movies. You know, people will try to say movies, like, it's only good if you see it as intended, you know?
Yeah.
Like, on the big screen.
It's like, so it's whatever. Not good. It's like,
well, then it's not good.
No, exactly. Yeah, like, it's the same thing with someone.
It's like, because, like, any musical artist would like you to listen to their music on the highest end system possible. They would love that. But they know that if it only works on the highest end system, then it's not successful
music. No, I think even, and I don't like many of his songs, but that XXXTentacion song, like that is what's that song called? You used to always play it on the old Touch Tunes.
Like, Look at Me.
Yeah, Look at Me. It's so blown out. It sounds so awesome on a huge sound system because of the bass, but it would sound just as good on your phone speaker because it sounds like it's played on a phone speaker. It's awful audio engineering. But it's amazing in the same way. it's like that is interesting. You know, like when you have super nice headphones or something, like it you know, you can listen to the Beatles and it sounds even crazier. You know, you're hearing things you never heard before. But you can listen in your shitty, you know, like the ones that come with your phone, still sounds great. Sgt. Pepper still bangs, you know, like on the shittiest, you know, headphones you could possibly find. It's like,
I agree. Like, if there is something that we're missing by not listening to 5.1, I would still say
it doesn't matter.
Not really great success.
Exactly.
I get that the idea is honestly to create something like an art gallery experience where it's like, it is kind of like filling the room and occupying different
spaces.
And
that's fine. But do it in an art gallery, you know? Like,
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, there's something like fun about that. And it's like, all right, if that's what you're going to do, then I'm not going to take this seriously otherwise, you know? And it's just like, then it's just an art gallery thing, you know? But, you know, so this kind of like ties into that, but we didn't really talk about the presentation on the 2005 release since it's pretty similar to the 2003 packaging. But like, what do you make of all this DVD business? Like, is there something possibly cool about it? Like in a, like a mini disc, like format focused kind of way, or is it just kind of like too pretentious and just too, you know, nobody's going to hear it this way, so it's just like a missed opportunity anyway, you know what I mean?
Well, I think, you know, take away the 5.1 thing, I think it's smart to put it on the DVD because the length, you know, it wouldn't fit, just one piece wouldn't fit on the thing. And I think this is actually two DVDs even. You know, like it wouldn't all fit, so you'd have to split it up. In fact, you know, that's how the record ends up being.
Yeah.
You know, so it is kind of like, it's smart to use that. And then I guess that also gave them, you know, the ability to, you know, mix it in 5.1. But it's just sort of, again, you're making it even more work to like get into. Cause I mean, when did this come out? You know, 2011, I guess I had a better access to a DVD player 10 years ago, but it's like, I can't even play this like in my car or in a computer. Actually, I don't think my car doesn't even have a CD player.
The same thing is true of, you know, the mini disc in a way. It was like just fortunate that streaming ended up, like, you know, digital format made it possible to actually hear it as it's supposed to be again, you know. Mm-hmm. But
that was at least like that was like playing with I don't feel like it's playing with the DVD format.
Yeah,
that would be like
really.
If it had a video, you know, aspect too, which it doesn't. It's just audio.
Yeah, it just wants you to like hear it from different parts of the room, which, you know, I guess is like the same thing that the Flaming Lips album kind of does as well. And I don't know. There's something like there, but it's just like nobody's ever going to experience it that way. It just feels like sort of a maybe, like I could say maybe it would be cooler that way, but who, like, I'll never know.
I forget where I read it. I can't remember if it was like a listener or just somebody's review I read of this or something, but it was like 5.1 is a scam by the speaker industry to sell you more speakers. And I really agree with that.
I was also thinking, as a side note, I hope that Autechre will kind of get the Guestcom thing back together and do a mini disc project with like Kanye's stem player thing.
Oh yeah, that'd be sick. Yeah.
Hell yeah, let's do it.
Really,
let's
great.
Do it, guys.
Write them if you're listening.
Yeah. All right. So I wanted to ask again, and I guess we should try to wrap this up soon, because I feel like anybody who's still listening to this podcast about these random things that nobody's heard be really impressed. But, you know, talk about Autechre's presence one last time. My understanding is that this one actually took quite a long time to finish and may have been composed much closer to the previous installments, like 2008 or so. So I don't know, when listening to it, I kind of thought again, like, I hear a lot of those metallic kind of sounds that come out like in the kind of post-XI Autechre stuff. And, you know, so I found it, you know, just interesting that they were playing with that possibly as early as, like, you know, even with the last one, 2005, 2008, and that for some reason they made several albums that don't use much of that before kind of getting back around to it. I mean, I think it's inarguable that for Elevent and then for, like, Elevent especially, we talked about how kind of, like, experimental that one actually is, and then definitely, like, with the AE Live stuff, they actually do weirdly get really interested in, like, electroacoustic music concrete, like that starts to really shine through. So it's weird that they were like playing with it like quite a few years before.
Yeah, I mean, it makes you wonder, like, you know, did it just sit on the burner, you know, for in their mind for a while?
They just pocketed that idea, like maybe that would be fun.
Yeah, which, you know, that's cool. I mean, if this garbage led us to you know, those awesome you know, AE Live like electroacoustic sets, then I say completely worth it.
Yeah. I was gonna say, like, to your point about like how it's kind of broken up on this vinyl rip, like so I was writing down stuff like part one, part
yeah,
two,
yeah,
part,
me
you
too.
Know, like writing down my, I'm like on part four, I just wrote down, you know, more tones, an AC is running, all the same bullshit. And that was all I wrote down for, like, honestly. So we can wrap it up. I'm wondering if, you know, you have any closing thoughts on this release. I was kind of hoping we'd hear from, like, listeners who are actually staunch defenders of this project. But as you can see, we barely heard from anybody at all, which is telling. And, like, a lot of people wrote in, like, did not have particularly nice things to say, you know. There's one more email that we got on this topic from listener Torin, who writes simply, "I don't really get this stuff." So I feel like that kind of sums it up. But, like, how would you sum it up? Because I feel like I get it and I don't like it.
Yeah, I think I get it and I don't like it. And I think that that's part of the thing, because we're not the only two people who get it in the world. You know, I think the reason that it's not more widely known is because it just honestly isn't that great. You know, I think if they had made, you know, an electroacoustic or a music concrete like record that was worthy of the canon, people would talk about it more. I mean, because the DVD one before the vinyl rip was pretty hard to track down.
It was.
But the first two, I mean, you can't go to the store and get them, but, you know, they're on Soulseek pretty easily and stuff. And still nobody talks about them or cares much. And I mean, for something on Rate Your Music by Autechre to only have, you know, 113, 115 ratings, 51 for the DVD ratings currently, that's incredibly low. You know, I've seen local band things that have you know, more than 50 ratings before, you know. That's incredibly low.
Yeah I guess, you know, in closing I'll just say that it feels like the only Autechre release that you don't really need to check out. Like, even if you're a really hardcore fan, I don't think you really need to listen to it, which in a way makes it interesting. You know, like that paradox of like, what would be the least interesting number? Well, that would make it interesting if it was the least interesting number.
Yeah.
So, but it nevertheless is kind of like the only thing that I don't think anybody really needs to check out. And, you know, if you're still with us, I'm sorry we made you listen to an hour and a half discussion of it.
I pretty much exactly agree. You know, there was plenty of guest com stuff I didn't really like, but there was always like something that made it kind of worthwhile. You know, even if it's just one track or even just a moment in some tracks or something, it was always like, you know, if you want to listen to it, like, you know, you're not going to regret it or anything. This one, it's not good. And there's one of these ratings here on Rate Your Music for the DVD. It says, boy, if you have 4 hours to spare, you might like this. And I think that sums it up pretty well. If you've got, five and a half, 6 hours, whatever the total box set is, you know, knock yourself out. But Don't feel that helped.
Was not helped by listening to the whole box set.
No, definitely not.
Was not good to do that. I regret that highly.
Me too. Oh, well. Well, at least we're done with it, and I'll delete these from my phone and never look back. Well, what do you think about Autechre's collaborations with the Hafler Trio? We'd normally do a listener email episode next week, but obviously we're not anticipating many more emails on the Hafler Trio. So feel free to prove us wrong, goncastpod@gmail.com. Either way, our next proper episode coming soon, going to be on some notable AE bootlegs. We want to hear what are your favorites, goncastpod@gmail.com. With those, if you like the show, help us out, subscribe, leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. Look us up, YouTube, stay connected, Twitter, Instagram. Those are @goncastpod, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.